So I thought we'd cover websites first. So who here hasn't used Windows Azure before or isn't familiar with Windows Azure? Is everyone familiar with how Windows Azure works as a overall? Yeah. So this is because the reason why I like this slide is because it's going to cover some of the abstractions for Azure websites, but also it's going to talk about how there's kind of two high level. There's two kind of services you can build in Windows Azure, and when you're building a website in your data center, you kind of got to manage all of the levels of the stack yourself. So you're managing the hardware. You're making sure they're up. You're managing, you know, if you're doing virtualization, you're managing the OS itself, you're patching the OS, you're putting the software and installing the software yourself. And then you're also rolling out, you know, you're managing the firewall and managing all your networking, and then you're managing your databases, and then you're installing the software for the databases, and then you're managing your application. So you're kind of on your own for the whole lot. And I think it's not new for you smart people, that's the whole point of, that's the reason why kind of cloud services are becoming, you know, the norm, right? Is that now you're progressing, you're kind of saying, okay, let's make Microsoft or Amazon worry about the hardware and whether there's people there in data centers up at night worrying about whether the machines are up, you know, and things like that. But with Windows Azure and with places like you know, Rackspace and with Amazon, that all they provide you know, with virtual machines is they're kind of taking care of managing the machines for you. But you still have to manage, and of course the virtualization stack. But then you still have to worry about the OS. You're installing virtual machines, you're building the virtual machines, or maybe you get it from a gallery, but you're still managing that OS, and you're still managing all the stuff that's in that machine. The next step is platform as a service. So a cloud service, and there's lots of different services that Windows Azure provides, but a cloud service, you're abstracted from the operating system. So now you're worrying about, okay, I'm building a virtual network, I'm connecting my logical components together. It's embarrassing. I've never had that happen before. No, it's the first time. So I think that, you know, as a platform, I'm a huge fan of platform as a service. And there's a punchline to this slide that I think will finish why I love it. Is that you're, you know, and with the cloud service, Joan, seriously. With a cloud service, you're, you know, yes, you can build a virtual network and you're connecting those logical components like I mentioned. And then, you know, you're building data services and other cloud services and other pieces of your application. But you're abstracted away from worrying about where those components, those logical services live. And I think the next level is you're abstracted from the lot of it. And then all your worry, and the thing is, this is the ultimately, that's what you want to worry about is your application, your data and your application, and that's it. And so that's why I really like these services that Azure provides on websites, because all you're doing is deploying a website, and then the rest, the data center takes care of the rest. So Windows Azure websites is a place where you can start simple. So there's different echelons of kind of scalability for websites, but it's great for, like, if you want to get a website up, you create a website, the website's created and up and running in seconds. And then what you do is you can start iterating on that, and it's great for kind of getting a website up and started, or, you know, you're testing a particular component of a system. And then you can code with lots of different frameworks. And so we support ASP.NET, of course, and our .NET family of languages and things like that. But also we natively support PHP and Node.js and others. And also going live is really easy. You can deploy, and there's rapid deployment as well as managing that website, and there's lots of switches, you know, in your it's almost like a dashboard. And also you can diagnose problems while it's running live in the portal. So any questions so far? So I thought we'd do a demo, but I like to make it a little bit more interesting than just a hello world. So if you bear with me, I've made the hello world demo a little bit more interesting. Well, hopefully you find it interesting, but it's got a little bit of code in there. And my favorite type of website right now is Node.js. So hopefully that's interesting to you. So let's go to the Windows Azure portal here, and I've got my portal open. And this is the place where you would create your services. So, and there's all sorts of different services here, but I'm going to stick to websites for now, and then Nick will take over showing mobile services. So let's create a new website. And so it's under Compute, Website, and I'm going to create it from a gallery. And I'm going to choose a particular type of Node.js kind of package. And it has Express built in. And Express is just a JavaScript library that allows you to do server-side. It hastens the project and ties it up a bit, as well as it allows you to do server-side templating and things like that. So let's give it a URL. So Dion Hart, hello world. And I'm going to create it. You can choose which data center you want to create, which region. I'm going to just create it in the United States. It's fine. And so in a few more seconds, our website will be up. There we go. It's done. So now if we click on this URL here, oh. How do I do that? Oh. Oh, my mouse is not working. Scroll. I think this is here. You mean like zoom it out like this? So now that website, all provisioned, all done, and you know, of course, it's blank. But there's no messing with a web server, and no messing with files and copying files and things like that. So let's get some coding done. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to open Web Matrix. And so Nick's going to talk about Visual Studio later on, but this is a cool little tool to if you're only, you know, working with websites, it's a great free tool to download to, and it knows how to talk to Git and TFS, and I'll get into that later, but it also knows how to talk to Azure, and you can operate with your website directly. So I'm opening my website directly from Windows Azure. Take a second. Okay, so I'm going to download, I'm going to connect to this Dion Hart Hello World website. And what I can do is I can download it locally. So I'm going to download it. And Web Matrix will detect that it's a Node.js site. And then it's going to set up Node.js on my machine. I've got Node already installed, but it would install it. And on top of that, it does a npm install. And it will have all of the modules, all the required modules that site has. So it's detected Node. And it will, the way Node works is with npm, it has this kind of module, this package loader, and it will look at all your requires and in all the modules that are required in your project, and it will download all the modules, and it's done it automatically. So that's what it's doing now. It's a module, yeah. Okay, so now we're up. What I like to do is I like to run my own Node server. So I'll show you a little trick that a Node expert showed me. So what I'm going to do is I open the Node command line, and I can cd into my project. So Dion Hart. And what I'm going to do is what I like to do is do npm install and just check that all the modules are installed. That's good. And now I like to install npm install it's called NodeMon. And what that does is when you run your Node server with NodeMon, it monitors all the files in your project. And if you change a file that the server requires to restart, it just automatically restarts it for you. So I've installed NodeMon, and then what I do is say NodeMon server.js. So that now my server is running, and it'll tell me what port it's running, and now we can try our website localhost. So let's go here in localhost 3000. And there's my site running locally. And then if I change any files, and we're going to change some files, so you'll see it restart. So now let's make our website more interesting. We'll go into our code. And so right now, with what Express is doing is there's this thing called routes, where you can different paths to when you hit the website with different paths, you can execute different JavaScript depending on those paths. So right now, the index path or the default path is returning some kind of rendered HTML that's running as part of Express. So what I thought we'd do is create a whole new web page. So under public, that's where most of your files live. This is where the client lives in your Node application. So I'm going to create a new HTML file under public, and let's call it index.html. Okay, and let's put in here a p with an ID of hello, and this is where our hello world message is going to go in our web page. Oh, and I've got some script here, and I'm going to add jQuery. I like jQuery, so I'm going to add that to my page. And I'll talk about main.js in a sec. That's a file I'm going to create, and I'm going to create some client-side JavaScript, Ajax, in our little web page, our Hello World app. So next, we'll update the index.js, and what we want to do is we want to return that HTML file directly. So just to save some time, I've copied the code in here. But let's, rather than rendering some HTML and returning that HTML to the client, let's actually return the file. So I'm going to return public index HTML. And so we'll make our website even more interesting. This is why I love writing website this way. And I think this is the new way, definitely the most popular way now to write websites is to have using Ajax. And no real client, no server-side rendering is kind of trendy. So now what we can do is, let's, in our server.js, this is our JavaScript for running in the server, and this is where, in our routes here, this is the default route right now, and that's where it calls that function to return index.html. Let's make another route here, and let's make an API. So we'll say API... and then we'll make a variable, and so we'll say hello world, and then we should return a message, right, to the client. And then let's give it a function, and we'll pass in the request and the response. So this is our callback when someone hits that URL. And then, so just to save some time, I'll paste in some code here. I don't want to hog Nick's session here too much. So now that route, that callback function, is going to pass in. I'm going to get the thing kind of parameter. I'm going to log it to the console, and I'll talk about that later in a sec. And also, I'm going to return to the client some JSON, which is like hello plus the parameter. And then let's, in the client, let's go and create, we haven't added our JavaScript yet, so let's add, our jQuery JavaScript file, and then let's create a new one. And this is my client-side JavaScript. This is going to run in the browser. And so what I want to do is I want to make a call to my Node server, and make an Ajax call and get my data and then alter that element in the DOM. So let's create a JavaScript file, and we'll call this main, because I had that I cheated and copied in the reference to that main.js file. And then I've got some code in here. So this is a function that's going to run automatically. And then this is going to get some JSON, and it's going to call this URL, which is my server, and it's going to call back this function with some data, and then I'm going to I've searched the DOM for my hello p, and then I'm going to replace the text inside there, and then I'm worried that my demo is not going to work, and then I'm going to get some just desserts by scrutinizing all of you guys all week. So now that should be fine. So we've got our server side done, our client side. So let's give it a whirl. Maybe this is, we'll check this and just make sure I've got everything. All right. Cool. Hello world. So, and that did it. Rather than a round trip and rendering, kind of that idea of rendering on the server and returning HTML, it was doing an AJAX call to the service and then getting that little piece of JSON. And what we can do is we can hit the site really quickly. I have a JSON plugin for my Chrome browser. What we can do is we can hit localhost 3000. And, oh, here we go. I've already got it in here. Hello, world. And then I've got hello, world, some JSON back from my service. And if we look in the console, we should see hello, world in our console. So that's a pretty, a much more interesting hello, world, Node.js application. Any questions about that so far? Yeah.
So the reason the console is the node mod, is that why it's showing
it? Say that again. No, that if you just ran the console normally, like say you just said node server.js, you will get the console. All NodeMon is doing is it's monitoring the file system. See how it's restarted a bunch of times here? It's automatically restarted the server when I changed the server.js file and some of the files that were inside my node service. So it's kind of cool. I like it. Okay, so let's get back to some slides. It's switching video because now it's trying to do presentation mode. So there's lots of different ways to deploy your website once you've started working on it. You're working on a local host, and there you want to start doing version control and pushing up your code in the case of Node, it's code, right? You want to push up your files up to the web server, your little slice of Windows Azure. And so my favorite is using Git, but we can use FTP. TFS is great because TFS it's Team Foundation service, and so that's our Team Foundation server up in the cloud, and it's awesome. What you can do is do lots of like project management type things, create storyboards, collaborate with your team and set up your team in there, as well as source control. And inside TFS, you can have Git or TFS native file system, or you can just use a Git with a local clone anywhere on your file system on your machine, and it's really cool. So let's, without any further ado, I'm going to show some deployment. I'm going to use my favorite method, my new favorite method, which is Git. So close that again. Okay, so now what we've done, we'll go into the portal and we'll set up a Git repository up on our website. So we'll click in on our website, and this is kind of the dashboard for our website. And what you can do is you can control it, but you can set up your deployment from source control on the dashboard. And then here's all your there's lots of options to choose from. Dropbox, GitHub, and so I'm going to create a local Git repository. So okay, so now that's set up. So now it gives me a nice cheat sheet on how to set it up, so you don't have to remember how to do it. So what I'll do is I'll just copy this URL here, and now I'm going to go into Git Bash, and then I'm going to set up my Git repository on my machine. So what I'll do is I'll cd to my code. And I know that's in my documents, my websites, because that's where WebMatrix likes to put it. And I'll CD into Dion Hutt. Obviously, I've tried this demo a couple of times. It's up to 6. but what we can do is, it's following this little cheat sheet. We want to just init the repository, and we want to commit. We want to add the files to a commit it, and then push it up. So now we just say git init this directory as a repository. And we say git add everything. And then git commit, and we'll give it a message, initial commit. couldn't spell. And then we say, oh, and then what we'd need to do is add the remote, which is Windows Azure and that URL. So what we do is you say git remote add Azure, and then this URL that link. So now we've created a remote, and so now we say git push Azure master, the master branch up on, so it's the master branch up on Windows Azure on our website. And also, what it does is Windows Azure websites detects that it's a Node.js site, and then it will automatically do all the npm install, and then will install any other modules that I had added since the last time I deployed it, and then it will start the service and the site's running. And it's great because now I in my deployment site page here, I've got different. It'll show me every time I've deployed to my website. And so then I see how it says it's like the active deployment. Say you push it up, or somebody else on the team pushes it up, and it's not ready to go live. What you can do is select a few previous commits, and then you can say, okay, I want to roll back to this commit. So it's kind of cool. So now if we test our website live, we should be able to go back to our dashboard. Cool. No one's impressed. So you saw how fast that was. Like I just love it how you're deploying and changing, and you can redeploy and. And as I mentioned, there's lots of different ways. You don't have to use ASP, or you don't have to use .NET if you don't want to. Even though that's a really cool technology where you're writing, you may be a .NET developer and you can use that same kind of skill set in your team. And there's lots of power in combining server rendering as well as client-side, and with ASP and MVC, you're getting the power of kind of structuring your application in model view controller on the server and on the client. There's lots of power in doing that. But we also support all of the standard web technologies that are really popular, Node.js, PHP, and you can do any fast CGI handler. But I'm just really having fun with Node.js right now because I love the fact that it's JavaScript on the server and on the client, and it's cool. So let's talk about scale. So there's three kind of tiers for a website when you deploy it on Windows Azure websites. So the free is the first tier, and it has daily quotas, and it's multi-tenant. So it's sitting on a shared machine, virtual machine. And then the next tier is shared, and it has more quota and more capability, and you can have more capability as far as scaling that website. And then the next level is standard, where you get a dedicated VM where your website's running in there, and then there's no quotas, and you're kind of. And the thing is, with Windows Azure, it's pay as you go. So the more you use, the more you pay. And I've got a little PowerPoint demo of how that works. So with shared, you get one instance, and your happy little website is running in our data center in a virtual environment, and see how there's kind of like the indication that it could be on multiple machines. Like, you don't really care. It's a multi-tenancy environment. Your website's running happily. The next instance is you can switch over to shared, and then in shared you're saying, okay, I want the next level, and I want to be able to slide. I want to be able to create multiple instances of my website, but I don't care what is the environment. I just want multiple instances and handle more traffic to my website. And then Windows Azure handles all the load balancing for you. And the next level is to go into standard. I think I've forgotten to. This is an old slide. So it's called standard. Is the maximum echelon of Windows Azure websites. But the idea is you're, you know, if you increment your the instances of, you know, you say, I want a standard instance of my my website. Now a new VM is spun up, and then your website is then deployed into that, and then you're in your own environment by yourself. And then what you can do is you can scale up and down, and then new instances are spun up for you, and then your website is then deployed, and then you're running happily, getting lots and lots of traffic from your wonderful website. And it's as simple as that. That slider looks exactly like the slider on the web, on the in the portal. I can show you. And also, with once you opt in for reserve for standard, you can then opt to run your free instances or your smaller, your lower tier websites in those reserved VMs. So it's kind of cool. Also, we have auto scaling. This is a new feature from we announced at Build, where you can set thresholds for the machines where your websites are running, and then as CPU utilization changes, then the auto scaling changes. So you can see how we've got our website, and then in, if the CPU starts to hit our upper threshold, then we can automatically spin up a new web a new instance and a new instance of your site. And then as CPU goes down, like we can then shut down that, and it saves you money. So you don't have to be continuously manually or write any logic or write any macros to kind of control that. It's all automatic. So elastic scaling to handle the changing load of your website. So I thought I'd show some of those scaling kind of aspects. So back in our handy dandy website, we can go into the scale section. Sorry about that. Say that again. So what we can do is we can change the echelon or the level of service for our website. So with free, you get one instance and it's running multi-tenancy, and we can move it to shared. And then it says, okay, you're got, there's some pricing or cost implications for doing this. And do you have permissions from the account owner? I'm a subscriber, and the account owner gives you permissions to then scale websites. But now what you can do is you can just literally slide and say, I want four instances, and it will then spin up four instances in a multi-tenancy environment, and you can handle much more load. And then if I save that, I just wanted to make a quick jump over here and see if I can show you something. I've got to change one. So at that point, you can then add your own domain. Once you hit that level, you can add your own domain, and then that traffic will be devoted to your Azure website in the Azure Data Center. And if we scale it one more into standard, what we can do is we can then add auto scaling. And then here we were saying, like, you know, we want the threshold to be three instances, and when it hits over 80%, I want you to spin up another instance. And then if another instance hits 80%, it will spin up another one. And then if it falls below 60%, then it will then it, that instance will go away if that site falls below that load. So I think it's a really cool thing, and you can set. The idea is it won't spin out of control. You're not going to get a huge bill, you know, because you're getting a lot of traffic. You can cap the number of instances that you can create as well. But I like that it's just sliders that you can really manage your website, and it gives your users a good experience.
Is
that
brand new?
The automatic scaling is brand new.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it applies to cloud services as well. And I believe you can a lot more control. There's a couple more. Mechanisms in cloud services, for example, which is really cool with cloud services, you can hook the metric to a queue, And so as say your cloud service is getting jobs from a queue, as the queue hits a threshold, then you spin up another service and you've got more services, kind of chewing down on a queue. So I thought that was really cool. But I think that's that power of building a system in the cloud is building from disparate, decoupled components. The scalability is you're building scale into your application from the start, as opposed to reaching scale saying, "Oh, I've got all these users now. What do we have to re-architect our system because we can't handle the load?" Okay, so that's scaling. How are we doing for time, Nick? What was I'll finish up. Hang on. Yeah, I'll finish up. And there's one last thing I want to talk about was logging and diagnostics. So if you want to see what's going on in your application, especially with Node, how you want to be able to log to that console, you're able to subscribe to Windows Azure and it's really easy to do. In the console, you just say, I want to turn on application logging, and then I want to set the level or how verbose I want the logging to happen. And then you just use you download the Azure, the Node kind of Azure module, and then you can connect to Windows Azure websites directly. And all you do is you just tail the log, and it's that easy. So and there's lots of other diagnostic tools, like New Relic is a really cool dashboard to be able to monitor multiple services in multiple data centers and in multiple kind of providers. So pretty cool. I don't know much about New Relic, but that's... I will leave it there. And Nick, you can take over. Thanks.
All right.
Do you want this?
What is that?
That's Wi-Fi. Internet. Say that again? No, I'm good. Oh. Oh, yeah.
Hello.
All right. Okay. We're not quite as organized as you guys were for your presentations,
yeah,
are we?
Yeah, I think we should ding us for a couple of points.
You guys are the pros. Is this projecting? Project one. Go to. Alright.
Yep. Okay. But it's a little stretched.
Yeah, I'll fix that. How's that look? Much better. Excellent. Okay. Alright. Hello, everybody. How are we? Yeah. Alright. Okay. So, let's start with the slides. Thank you for coming. No, so this is all going to be hands-on. We're going to do lots of coding. I'm going to show you a whole bunch of new features in mobile services. Some of the cool ones Dion just showed for websites, I think as a takeaway that you should look at outside of this, is the auto-scaling and also the diagnostics and logging bit, which he couldn't quite get to then. But essentially that allows you to stream logs directly from the website in real time, directly into Visual Studio. So you can see what's happening sort of as you go. But we're going to talk about mobile services. And mobile services is essentially, it's a turnkey back-end service for your device applications. And when I say device applications, that could be, Windows Store, Windows Phone, and iOS, and Android. You can actually even use it in HTML.js, sort of Apache Cordova apps, or even HTML.js websites. So who here has used mobile services before? Okay, a couple people. So I'm going to start with the quick start, but then we're going to jump in quite deep and then start looking at some new features. So in the portal here, you've got this thing called mobile services. And one of the things I'd like to point out is mobile services is actually free or has a free tier. So what that means to you guys as students is you don't have to pay to use it. So if you look here, you can see that the free tier, in this particular case, you can have up to 10 mobile services on the free scale tier. So there's a scale tab like Dion showed for websites. And you can get up to 500,000 API calls against that a month. And of course, with that, you get a free 20 meg database, which is where all that data may be stored. So that's the in terms of pricing, there is a free tier that gets you started. Now, if I wanted to create one of these mobile services, it's new, compute, mobile service, create. We give it a unique name, and we'll say Windows Azure Mobile Services. It's probably taken. It needs to be unique, and it's going to be WAMS Nick. I'm going to, that's where you get your free mobile DB, if you want it, is in this drop-down here. But I'm going to go and use a new database, because that makes it look like I'm doing things to my manager because he's going to get a bigger bill, right? You guys will learn that when you go out and start working in industry. So what we do here is we go down and we say we're going to deploy to North Europe, and we hit go. So what we've basically done is we've told mobile services to go off and configure a web tier. This is our back end that our devices can call into. And we've also told it to go and create a database. And that database is where all of our data that's coming to and from this service is going to be stored. So this here takes about sort of 20 seconds. And you can see along here we actually have a number of other mobile services, and these are ones which we'll come and use in a little bit. But once this is done, we'll download what's called a quick start, and this quick start is going to have the full scaffolding you need to see how you can really get started, you know, for those guys that haven't used it before. And then from that, we'll go out and build it out a bit further. So it's done now. I'm going to click into it, and we're presented with this quick start page. You can see if you were developing with any of these platforms, there's quick starts for each of them. We're going to do a Windows Store app. I'm going to create a new Windows Store app, and all you have to do is install the tools, click Create a Table. Now we'll see how you can create real tables later on. This is a sort of shortcut for the quick start, and then we can download a sample application. Going to save this, open the zip, and just extract it out here, and pop it open in Visual Studio. Now you'll note here that I'm actually using Visual Studio 2013 preview, because part of this session is showing you what's new, and this is the preview which we announced and launched at Build. You can download it off Microsoft.com or MSDN.com if you want to, MSDN.microsoft.com I should say. And the quick start at the moment from the portal is configured for Windows 8 applications. And we're going to actually build a Windows 8.1 app here. So what I need to do with this quick start, the small change is just to go and turn it into an 8.1 app. You can do that in the properties just by hitting that, changing the target to 8.1, and then hitting build. So once this is built, we can then spin it up and start using it. There it done, F5. And now let's have a look at what this app does, and then we'll have a look at the code that's used to communicate with that mobile service. So it's a simple task application. So one thing that you guys should do is turn up to the exhibition center later. Party tonight. And you can see, so this is just simple items. We're actually performing an insert here. So in the time it takes me to add this item, that's actually going and inserting it to a mobile service in the cloud. And you can see it turning up here. We can complete items, and we can also refresh items. So that's an insert, an update, and a refresh. There's also delete operations. Let's pull this over and dock it and return back to our portal here. So if I select the data tab now in this mobile service, you can see there's that to-do item that we created in the quick start. If I click into it, we can see that there is a number of items here, and they're the items that we just inserted. So let's add another one to show it's real. Let me pull this out so I can hit save properly. Okay, I must have hit it twice there. And hit refresh on this guy. and you can see that that's now saved. So that's easy, quite fast and straightforward CRUD operations. If we look at the source code here, we can drop back into Visual Studio and we can see what actually allows us to perform those operations. There's a few references here that this solution comes with pre-configured, and this is just a client library for mobile services. The next thing that we have here is what's called the mobile services client. So this mobile services client is essentially your client proxy that allows you to interact with that mobile service. And what we've done is we've made it really easy for you to perform those CRUD operations against your mobile service, and we'll see those in a second. You'll see the two parameters passed in here. One is the endpoint. So you can see this is the WAMS NIC mobile service, and it's got an application key. Now, if we want to see how did we do those inserts and updates, we can flip to main page here. We can come down and say, well, hold on, we were persisting data in terms of a to-do item to that table, all right? We're sending up to-do items. So we need an entity to reflect that item that's serialized from your client to the server. So we have a simple class here. It's got an ID. It's got a text field. That's where we're typing in the description, and a complete field that indicated whether it was complete. Moving down, you'll see what we've got is now we say in our app code behind here, we've defined this public static mobile service. So to get a handle to that to-do item table so we can work with it, we say app.mobileService, use a getTable method, and pass in the generic type to-do item. Now, simply to insert with that, we've now got this to-do table handle. We just say insert async. So it's one simple line of code. You don't need to know about, you know, HTTP client or HTTP web request. It's just a simple, consistent client experience here. If we want to do an update, you can see an update, again, is calling update async. And if we want to query that data back when I hit the refresh button, it's just saying to-do table.where. You're passing in a link expression here. And then we're just saying to collection async. And that'll actually perform a query against the server and return the data. So you could query on anything that's actually any property on the to-do item. So that's sort of the client interaction with the server. And across all those device platforms, Windows Phone, Windows Store, iOS, Android, it's a simple, consistent experience. Very few lines of code to interact with this. But if you're building out applications that have this service tier, typically you want to be able to perform some kind of operation on the server side. Perhaps it's validating some logic. Perhaps it's setting a created date. It could be calling or sending an email, or calling a third-party service. So what we've got here on each table is what we call server-side script. So if I click into this script here, you can see that I can hook into the insert, update, delete, and read operations and perform actions. So what I can do now is I can say things like item.created date is equal to new date. Hit save. And with that, that's going to go and tag on a created date to that item before it's inserted using request.execute. Now that change is actually live, so if we return to the application here now and say with date, we can hit save, and if we come back to our portal and go back to browse that data, you'll see that now there's a created date column, and with date now has that. Pretty cool, right? So there's no need to write any SQL in this instance, but you can if you want to. So the next thing I'd like to show you is another new feature, and this new feature is essentially what we call source control. So not everyone wants to edit script in the portal. Some people want to just edit it locally and then commit it back, like Dion did with his website deployment, commit it back and then have that change go live. It works really well in, I guess, team environments where you have more than one developer working on code. So to set up source control, we hit set up source control here on the dashboard. We hit OK. And this is going to go off and configure source control for us. And this takes about 40 seconds, which is a good time for questions. Come on, we asked you lots of questions yesterday. You can ask them back. Uh-oh.
our project you with Azure,
yep.
I think it's quite great.
Yep.
But my mentor asked me, why do you choose Windows Azure, not the other cloud platform, such as Google or Amazon?
Yep. Right.
So, not quite satisfied. So may I ask, what's the advantage and disadvantage of Windows Azure compared with some other cloud platform?
OK. Okay. Am I answering your homework? Is this a homework question? It sounds like one. Didn't you say your professor asked you? It's actually, there's quite a few differences, and there's quite a lot of common elements. One thing that other cloud platforms don't have, for instance, is mobile services, which I'm showing you here. So really, it depends on your scenario, and the best way to assess it is to look at what your scenario is, and then go and look at what features are provided for both, and do an assessment as to, you know, what meets your problem and what meets your solution's requirements. We can go through it in more detail later if you want, but I think we've got 14 minutes and two demos to do still. But good question. So now that that's done, we've got a Git URL here. We can copy that. I can now say, take my command prompt here. So let's see here. Is it there? Yeah. Okay, can you guys read that? Not really. Defaults, let's go up. Did that not apply? Let's try again. Yeah. Okay, there we go. So what I can do now is I can simply say, go to my dev folder, say git clone, can paste in that URL. Now that's going to pull down my wrong password. Oh, that's right. I forgot my password. I changed it this morning. There we go.
To make it easier?
Yeah, to make it easier. There we go. So now we've pulled down that that code, so we can cd into WAMS Nick, and we can say tree, let's say /F. Now you can see that's pulled down all the code for our mobile service. Key things being the table here. Now this table has a to-do item table that we saw before. We can see the insert script is here. If there was a read script, it would be .read. And there's a JSON file here that's simply the permissions. But if I say Sublime and you say arc service table to-do item, you can see that we can actually see that. I don't want the update. We can see that we've got our code here. I can make changes locally, save that, close this down. Now I can say git-commit am and say updated insert script. Now that's committed it locally. Now I can push that directly to server and say git push enter my password, and now that's pushing that change directly up to the server, so we've actually edited that locally. If we come back to our data tab here, hit to-do item and script, you'll see now that basically you don't have to edit within the portal experience. You can edit locally and push up without having to sort of copy and paste from local files. So that's a pretty cool experience. Thank you. So I was going to do a blob demo, but I think we're running low on time. So what we'll do is we'll go straight to showing some other new features that we've got in the next version of Visual Studio we're releasing, and that's available for download as well. So this is, as I said, it's a Visual Studio 2013 preview. So let's stop this solution. Let's close this and say File New Project. And I'm going to call this Tile Demo. Now, let's go back to our slides here. Let's add a new slide. And say, let's have a look at our tile notification options. So you know tiles, right? These things you see on the start screen here? They're essentially the gateway to your application. If you want users to come back and sort of click into your app, live tiles are a good way of getting those users engaged with your app. They'll show new, up-to-date information. You can see here, this one's showing the latest weather in London. You can see the latest news here, some travel information. And push notifications and periodic notifications are two ways you can use to update these tiles. So let's have a look at how both of those work. So let me get ready for my finger painting here. Oops, wrong app. Let's try that again. Okay. So everything above the top line, we're going to say that's periodic notifications. So if we have our client device here, in this case my laptop, a periodic notification is a polling-based solution. So at a certain interval T, in this case the most granular is every 30 minutes, what it will do is it will call a service API, and that service API can return content in the form of a tile template. So let's draw our service API here, and this is a mobile service. And what we'll do is when that 30-minute period hits, it calls that API, and that returns back some data in the form of XML. Right, and that's periodic notifications. So what happens if you have an app where you need to go and deliver notifications somewhat in real time? You know, more granular than every 30 minutes. Maybe when an action occurs on the server, or maybe when someone inserts some data, maybe when someone, you know, clicks a button in the app. To do that, you can use what's called push notifications, and the workflow is a little bit different. You have a device. Now that device, what it has to do is it has to request a channel from a service called WNS. Now, a channel is essentially a URL and allows you to target that URL with the tile content, so you're actually pushing content to the device. So this is step one. We request a channel, and that returns back a channel. Now, once we have our channel, we need to either retain that locally or put it somewhere where we can use it later on. So if you think of that weather tile, for instance, when the weather changes, we want to send a notification. Now, we need something to monitor the weather, right? So we can use, say, a mobile service. So what we need now is our mobile service, say, could be monitoring the weather. And in this case, we've got a device with a channel, and we've requested that. So now we just say, let's go and send that channel up to our mobile service and have that persisted in our DB. Now, once that's there, our service determines that something's changed. In the weather example, it's like, hey, the weather's changed. Let's send a notification to the end user. So it grabs those channels and then composes a notification in the same XML format as above and sends it to WNS. WNS will then deliver it to the client app in Windows and update your live tile. So that's periodic is this first one, and this is push, the second one. So we're going to demo both of them in just 7 minutes. Let me close that. Okay. So we've got our tile demo here. Now to do, let's do periodic notifications first. We open the package manifest here. Oh, one key thing I want to show you that I was going to show you in the tile, in the demo we had to skip, is the new Server Explorer experience for mobile services. So we saw how we could edit locally, right? But you can also edit mobile services now using Server Explorer. You can see I can expand this mobile service. If we look at the one we did before, WMAMS NIC, you can see that there. We can expand to do item here, and I can edit the insert script, and you can see that that's the exact same script from the portal. So now it's integrated directly into VS. So pretty cool there. Okay, so going back to this demo, let's come along here and let's say we want our periodic notification to happen every half hour, and I want that to happen, or that API that's going to poll, it's going to be called tile demo azuremobile.net WAC API WAC periodic. Okay, now for our periodic notification, I'll show you a new tile type in Windows, which is a 310 by 310 tile. So if I come in here, we need to provide a default for the application so it knows, you know, what's the default logo that your application is going to have for 310 by 310. I've got one here. And we also need to specify a default 310 by 150 because that is the minimum default size here. So I'll do that as well. So now we've got two tiles here. And what we're going to do is we're going to show you the new sort of big tile that's supported. Let's see if we've got one here. It's called large. So we're going to send a notification of a large tile like this, or do it, using periodic notifications. So simple configuration, set some defaults, set your API endpoint. Now let's have a look at how we can go and specify this API endpoint. So if I come to tile demo, you saw before we were working in the data tab and we were writing script, right? But we found not everyone wants to execute script on a CRUD operation. Some people want to execute script based on an API call that's not tied to inserting any data. So this is a perfect example. We may want to just send back some template type from here. So we call that custom API, and we just shipped this. So I can create a new custom API, and we're going to call it periodic. Periodic. Is that right? Yeah, that's how I spelled it. Periodic. You can specify permissions here, so it's just REST API. I'm going to say everyone can hit get on this. Only people with the app key can hit the others. So we'll close this. We can now click in, and we can edit that API. I'm going to say custom API tile here. It's a little snippet I created earlier. And you can see what I'm doing here is when someone executes get against this API, which is what we configured in the client, it's just going to return back an XML template. Now, you can make this as dynamic as you want, but this is a template for tiles. And these are all defined on the Windows documentation. So if you come in here, we won't wait for this to load. It seems to be a little slow, but if you come in there, there'll be details of all the different template types and the XML you can use to define them. So now that we've done that, we've got our client and server hooked up. We need to save our server-side piece, of course. Let's hit save. Dismiss that. And now let's run our app. So this is just an empty app at the moment, right? But every half hour, it's going to hit this periodic endpoint. So I come back to the start here, swipe down. This is Windows 8.1, and pin to start. Drop this over here, and let's say resize this to large. So what will happen is when that goes, which it has, it does it when you first run, you can see that's gone. It's pulled down this picture of my co-host on the cloud cover getting makeup on, and you've got a wide template there delivered from the cloud. Pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
No code except for the server-side piece. Client is just config. So let's look at the more complicated example, the push notification scenario. So to add push, so recall push is when you want to start delivering things more frequently than every sort of 30 minutes. It's sort of on demand. To add push notification, we've added a new feature in Visual Studio here under add called add push notification. Has anyone configured this manually before in Windows 8 and VS 2012? There's two different portals. There's lots of code you have to do. We've provided the wizard to do all of it for you. So it makes that really complex workflow really straightforward and easy. So we just hit next. We provide our login credentials for the Windows Store. And we call this, if I can remember my password, I love Dion. Yeah, that's right. So we click in. We've got a list of all our store apps. And we'll say, Nick's app. So I can actually reserve an app name now directly from Visual Studio without ever hitting the portal. There it is there. So I say I want to configure Nick's app, and I want to say here that now that I've configured my app, what mobile service do I want to configure? Well, let's configure Tile Demo. Hit next, hit finish, and we're done. So that's going to deal with requesting the channel on the client, registering that with my mobile service, storing that in a channels table, and it's also going to drop in some sample code to deliver a notification to us. And it's done all of that without requiring us to basically write any code. Let's run it and see that in action. And this is a toast in this case. So you can see, bam, there's a toast notification pushed on demand. We can change this slightly here. Let me show you a quick demo. This is the insert script that it generated. So tiles demo, you can see it added a channels table now. I hit insert. This is the insert script on the server side. The first thing it does is call send notification. I'm going to come down here and change this to say WAMS wide tile push. Hit save there. And then I will go and grab a public image URL. So this was part of the storage demo that I didn't do, but I've got some pictures from my playing around earlier. So Windows Azure Storage is essentially like a place you can drop files into online and basically serve them out back to your users. Actually, I selected the wrong one here. Let's go to Nikar as my storage account. We've got blobs. So let me take a second. Go to tiles. That's not the right one. It was this one. Actually, I was in the right one to start with. Let's select this guy. Copy the URL, so it's just a public URL there. I keep going to go back to the portal because I keep forgetting that I can edit them all now here in Visual Studio. So we can now drop this in. So that's now saved. So our send notification is going to send a tile update. So let's run this. That's going to request a channel, register it with our service, and send a tile update. So now let's go and pin this. And it's in the wide mode here now. And we can see, ta-da! There's the picture. All right. So thank you. I hope you enjoyed that. A few cool new features in mobile services. Source control support. So we used Git to basically edit our files locally and push them back up. We saw Server Explorer and Visual Studio. We saw how to edit scripts within Server Explorer and Visual Studio. We saw custom API, which is a new way of executing code on the server side that's not coupled with CRUD operations. And finally, we saw the new push notification wizard in VS. So thank you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Any questions?
Yeah, so what you would do in that case is when you register the channel with the server side in the code that it dropped in there, you can go and look at it later on, but in the code that was dropped in, you could use geolocator, and geolocator could find the position of the current user, and when you register that channel, you also store that user's geolocation. Now, let's say at the point in time that there's something to be sent to that person within that region, that's simply in your custom API when you call in. You just do a query. You can use the spatial data type in SQL called geography, and use, say, stdistance, which is a function on that. Say, give me back all the channels within 1 mile, 2 miles of this particular origin. And you'll get those channels, and you can send information to them.
Okay.
Yep. Also worth looking at geofencing support in Windows 8.1. Any other questions?
Okay.
Yes, you can. Sort of. You go in. So you're a student, so you should be able to request through academic.
The way it approaches, there's no actual free student account right now.
MSDN.
Professors can request that they have courses.
Yeah.
And that way, if you're taking a course, the professor can actually get grants, so that every student in their class has credit card free Azure accounts that are bigger 5 months.
Yeah.
But right now, DreamSpark doesn't actually have an Azure, so you have.
Yeah.
Free aspect of it.
Yeah.
So you can use that. That's the same for the public debt.
Yeah.
But if you have the professors who are trying to do the class, they can actually just request, and we've got a lot of professors doing this again already, where they'll just say, hey, I've got a teaching class with 50 students, and I want them to have the ability to use Azure in their class projects and so on, and we can give them grants. But right now, we don't have the ability. The basic problem is Azure has a lot of stuff running on it, and there's a limit to how much you can wait free because you have to make sure.
I think the way I look at it, there's kind of two types of ways you'd want to explore Windows Azure as a student. There's one where, in a classroom setting, like that you just described, was, you know, the professor gives you an account. Invariably, in that scenario, you want to kick the tires. You want to learn how to build more complex systems. So you're going to be using some of the enterprise features. Maybe you want to create a cloud service and then use like AppFabric or, you know, Service Bus to then connect it to something, you know, building a hybrid system, or you want to use some of the more complex features that aren't free. And that's good that you get an account from your professor. If you want to build an application like a website or you want to write a web back end to your mobile app, then those are free, you know.
Yeah.
And so if you're able to create an account, and unfortunately there's a credit card requirement to create an official account. But you could create to get started, you could create an eval, and then, you know, an evaluation account, and then create your free. You can create 10 free mobile services or 10 free websites, and that will remain free as long as you are okay with the limitations of, you know, bandwidth and things like that.
Yeah. So to summarize, academic supervisor can request a grant. Second way is create an Azure subscription. You have to enter your credit card details, but you can use all the free tier without any cost. It will warn you, like it showed in Dion's presentation, if something's going to cost you money. In addition to that, there's BizSpark. So if you are running a startup, you can apply for a BizSpark account, and that comes with an MSDN subscription, which has Azure as well. And lastly, there's MSDN subscriptions, but that's more typically out in industry, you'll have that. BizSpark's a good one.
Myself playing around with mobile services, writing my own apps, is it, you know, starting at the free tier, you can set up the entire application and it's all running and you don't have to spend any money to get started, you know, or to get the app written. And then once you start experiencing, you know, load, you know, say the app's in the store and you're getting users, then you can start, you know, scaling up. You know, you don't have to re-architect your system. That's what I mean, like it's scale built in.
All right, any other questions or are you guys all hungry? Okay, go for it.
So we had this thing for, I made the website for web hosting, and then we decided we want to make an optimized one, so we talked to the same database using a .NET app, but there's a problem that the SQL Azure is 1433, and that's like blocking certain firewalls and stuff.
Yep. Let me show you. So what you do, this is SQL. Click here on server. Click configure. So this is the DB, and this is for the server. You can see here this is a DB I've used before, but you can basically go and put in your IP address. In this case, this is the IP from my current client IP. Drop that in. You could do a range. You could say 0 to 255 if you wanted.
Or you could do the domain school.
Yep. And hit save. Yeah, no, but so this is it. So
I
think this is what you're saying. When you try to connect, it fails because it's on 1433.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because SQL Azure by default restricts all ports in terms of anything external trying to hit it. There's a firewall rule there.
Yeah.
And what we did here is we just opened up the firewall rule for everything on this subnet to be able to connect. So if I now go to SQL Management Studio and try to hit that, I'll be able to hit it.
Yeah, I think it's on our end.
Right. Yeah. So you're.
Sometimes you're using a proxy,
yeah.
And the thing is, the IP address. Say you.
No, the network
IP
admin.
Config and you
is,
find the IP address. That's
yeah.
not the IP address that SQL Server is seeing.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's tricky to
yeah.
do it through there to manage it.
Yeah, it's probably more likely your network admin is filtering for everything, but AD and 443. So you probably just need to say to them, hey, I need to connect to SQL Server for student projects, open up 1433.
And they may need
that's,
to do it for
that's
your
it.
User. Like
yeah.
they just change a, do a,
yeah.
Change your settings for your
yeah.
user to do that.
If you're running SQL in a VM, which is more costly, you have to manage it yourself, but with VMs, you can actually change the port mapping. You could say AD maps to 1433. But yeah, it sounds like you need to talk to your network admin. Or use the built-in
portal.
So you just select a DB, and then you say manage, and then that will take you to a Silverlight portal. And then from there, you can log in, and you can perform all sorts of actions across your DB.
Okay. Have you used that?
I think I've got Silverlight disabled in this, actually, so that's not going to work. But if you do that, let me say options always allow. I tend to prefer using SQL Management Studio, so I never actually hit this. Now let's try that one more time, that's always allowed. But I do think that I probably got Silverlight disabled. Anyhow, this there it goes, so now it's allowing. Oh no, it's not even. New machine, haven't installed it,
never used this
CMI portal.
Yeah, so you can,
you can go there.
You can manage all your tables there, your schema, you can form queries.
Yeah. So, but, it really depends on what you're more comfortable with. I like SQL Management Studio, so for that, your professor is going to have to, or not your professor, your network admin is going to have to open up that port. Alternatively, use the SQLite portal.
Or do it at home.
Yeah.
No one wants to work at home.
Any more questions about websites?
I guess if it's examples online,
that'd be really awesome. Oh, there's tons of. I can chat later.
This video will be online, and you can actually follow along if you download the tools. So should be fine.
If you go to windowsazure.com, you just click on websites or Azure Mobile Services, there's just tons of,
So documentation, websites or mobile services. Click in. These are all tutorials across here. So if you wanted to do a push tutorial, let's say push notification to users, shows you sort of step by step what to do. So that's all on the windowsazure.com.
Same with website, there's, and it breaks down into, is it deployment, is it diagnostic, like logging, is it, each of the different templates.
If you want to chop the recording, that's fine. If you haven't already, I realize we're well over. Okay.
All right.
Thanks. We'll be available for questions off to the side.
Thanks for being one of the five people that showed up to our session. Thanks for the moral support, Susan.
actually, I'm behind.